Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in on a gorgeous Thursday afternoon. Man, it is this is beautiful spring weather. Temperatures in the upper 60s, maybe touching 70. Got a nice breeze, plenty of sunshine, hardly a cloud in the sky. Hope everybody doing well. We have something of a rare situation here.
Drew didn't even know to turn my mic on.
That's right. He's not used to turning that mic on.
How long it's been since
we have everyone who is scheduled to be in this room, in the room, in the control room. You hear the voice of Dan Peck.
Ferguson's not really scheduled to be here. He's
our regular. He's our regular.
I've been doing this for a few years.
He's our regular guest host.
It is Ferg's Day.
Yeah, that's right. But, Dan, first, man, congratulations on the season. Tough way to go out, but the Troy women making it all the way to the Final Four of the WNIT.
So proud of the team, the program, the run they had this year to get up off the mat. They started 0-6. Did not win a game in November, and to stay competitive, to stay upbeat throughout that, and then to stay competitive all season long for the Sun Belt title, finishing 15-3 in conference play, and then to overcome the adversity of the disappointment of losing in the first round of the Sun Belt tournament, to win three WNIT games, first time they've ever won a postseason game in program history, and then to take Minnesota down to the wire last night. That game came down to Minnesota hits a three in the final minute when Troy had cut it down to one, and Minnesota is able to take care of business after that. But that thing came down to the last minute, and I've never heard for any reason. The men's basketball team has played big games in the last couple of years. I've never heard Trojan Arena like it was last night. I've never heard it like that, and that was a really special thing. I'm glad that team got to experience.
Following along, it seemed like the first quarter is what did them in.
Yeah, it was. You know, the first half, Troy just could. I mean, Troy could not force turnovers, which has been a big thing. Minnesota's point guard played extremely well. Troy had been forcing turnovers as well as anybody in the conference. Minnesota just finishes with one in the first half last night, and Troy was able. I mean, Minnesota got it all the way to 16 in the third quarter, but Troy fights back, cuts it to one in the final minute of the game, but just not able to get over the hump and take the lead. So Minnesota on to the WNIT finals against St. Louis, and for the Trojans, back to the drawing board, knowing that most of the production from last night's game is graduating. So now the question is, what do you do after, you know, 80-90%? But that's
you do what the whole country does, yep. And go out and refill that roster.
Yeah.
It is crazy looking at roster turnover everywhere.
The only thing that's really different is that they're losing them to graduation. Most teams in the mid-major level are experiencing you're losing your best players to the transfer portal. You're just not losing them to graduation. Troy's four best players this season all graduating after last night, and so it's a new era for Troy basketball starting next year. But yeah, just a really special run and eight straight seasons now of 20 plus wins for the Troy Trojans. Shanda Rigby doing a great job.
Yeah, very, very, very impressive. And as you mentioned, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer also here in the studio. Ferg, it is a busy, busy time. We're a couple of days away from A-Day. There are tons of things going on this weekend. And Dan talking about basketball and the transfer portal, and Auburn's had two in and one saying he's staying so far.
Yep. Yeah. So yesterday with the news of Trey Donaldson jumping in the portal, not surprising that one of Auburn's point guards was gone. It was just going to be who it was. Here's the thing with Trey Donaldson. I'll say it's like this is just college basketball, right?
Yeah.
There are 300 and something D1 teams. I don't think it's a situation of any hard feelings or guys getting run off or anything like that. In the case of Katie Johnson as well, I think it's just like, hey, Trey Dawson likely was not going to be a starter next season just because of the fact he wasn't this year for most of the year, and that Auburn's recruiting experienced point guards in the portal, J.P. McGee's being the big one here recently. So Trey Dawson's a guy who definitely could start somewhere and start at a really good school, and it's just, you know, those opportunities are going to be there elsewhere. You know, you move on, and then as Auburn tries to maybe get some more experience into their lineup next season. But, it was just going to be interesting to see which one. And I'm not saying this is going to rule out any other moves in the backcourt. Right. But, I think Trey Donaldson had a really good 2 years at Auburn. Auburn would have loved to have kept him around for sure. But this is just what college basketball is. And you have that opportunity to go elsewhere and get more playing time. He's going to take advantage of that. And I think he's going to be a great player wherever he ends up.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes back home to Florida State.
Been hearing that a lot.
And, Bruce Pearl in that sort of exit press conference that he had at the end of the season was talking about teams doing what is legal now, not teams doing it, but NIL folks. And, I've got a few folks that are pretty close at Florida State, and they said that Florida State had let Trey Donaldson know that he could do very well for himself by coming home and have an opportunity to play much more than 20 minutes a game.
I think that would be a really good landing spot for him, and I think I think he's a guy that is – worthy of playing heavy, starter minutes somewhere else at a high level. And I know Florida State hadn't been great the last few years, but I mean, it's Leonard Hamilton. It's going back home. I mean, he's got the average. If they get the right pieces around, Florida State is always one of those teams that's always going to have talent. It might not always fit together at the same time, but when they click, they really, really click. So
rough couple seasons for Leonard Hamilton, but they were, I mean, people might forget, they were one of the five best teams in college basketball when the season was canceled in 2020. It wasn't all that long ago.
And they've been a factory for producing, like, draft lottery talent, even years where they've been down.
Yeah, multiple NBA starters, still to this day that came from Florida State. So I think Florida and probably Florida State. Like the state of Florida and probably Florida State makes sense for Trey. It didn't seem like, just based on everything since the season ended, didn't seem like there was it didn't seem as though the plan for Auburn was to run it back with Trey and Aiden splitting time at point guard.
No, but it did seem like if Trey was here, it would be very difficult for him to be able to expect 30 minutes a game.
Yeah.
So a guy going into his third year, it's almost expected.
Like I said,
if you're in your third year and you're not the starter or playing the most minutes, you're looking.
Yeah, and like I said, no hard feelings, I think, for anybody.
I think Auburn definitely wanted him back. Do you think there was a lot of warning for Auburn?
I think it's one of those situations
this
where
one just
I think
felt, this one felt
the
like
leaves.
A little more of a surprise. Than,
yeah, I mean, I think the timing of J.P. McGee being on campus this week probably had something to do with it. I think it's very apparent that Auburn wants to bring in another point guard. And I think that's a situation where you look around and say, okay, if they're trying to bring in another point guard, it ain't like they're not going to use me, but they just might not use me as much. If I'm sitting in Trey Donaldson's situation right now, and I know what I do wonder, with Trey entering year three, what that looks like compared to maybe an Aiden Holloway entering a year two, and say Auburn goes and gets another point guard in the portal, a guy that they can say, hey, you're going to be our dude next year. I, for one, think there is a potential for Aiden Holloway in that scenario to kind of get back, to what people thought he was coming out of high school, especially with the shooting. If he doesn't have the pressure on him to be the dude, the guy, maybe that helps him out a little bit, gets off to a better start and he's a shooter. And I think you can use a guy like Aiden Holloway off the bench. And you could use a guy like Trey Donaldson off the bench, obviously, as well. But I do think there's value. Like, Aiden Holloway does not strike me as a guy that has to be the guy. And when you are in year two compared to year three, I think that's the big difference there. Where like you said, like if you're Trey Donaldson, you could start somewhere.
This time next year, if we're coming off a season where Aiden Holloway plays 10, 12 minutes a game and doesn't seem like he's in the plans for year three as the starter at point guard, we could be having this conversation about Aiden Holloway. In this case, it's Trey Donaldson, and when playing time seems to trump so much else in college basketball in these sorts of situations, where I'd be shocked to see Trey go somewhere where he's not in line for
you're right. It's not. It's
other things matter too.
Well, play and pay. Those are the two things. Yeah. I'd be shocked to see, you know, to hear about players going somewhere where they're going to be making a whole lot less.
Well,
I'm also shocked to see them go somewhere where they don't expect to play more.
And that's an unfortunate thing about NIL is that I understand that this is also a very serious financial decision for a lot of these guys.
But, absolutely.
But it wasn't all that long ago. You'd look at Trey Donaldson and you'd say, you know, maybe he spends a year at the mid-major level as a starting point guard to get those 30 minutes a game. But I think some of the creature comforts that you lose dropping from the SEC or the ACC to a mid-major level might be too great for Trey Donaldson to consider. Even, you know what I mean? Like, because there are excellent mid-major programs in Florida. Like there are a couple. One of them went to the Final Four 2 years ago.
And you know what?
Like,
and you know what? And a lot of them are really, really looking for players because they're losing them so fast.
Because those players,
who steps up and plays well, has got the opportunity to jump to a bigger school.
I mean, what John L. from FAU just entering the portal earlier this week.
A lot of these FAU guys are entering the portal with the signs that was saying, "Hey, I could come back to FAU." Which I mean, I think in the case of that is like FAU's.
If Michigan doesn't want me.
FAU's got a really good program, and you know, if you go into the portal and look around and you're not feeling great about your options or something like that, there's that familiarity. And FAU's one of those programs that did take that step forward. But, yeah, you're going to, you know, I'm interested to see the other news coming out yesterday that an old friend, Johan Traore,
back in the portal. Yeah.
He had a really good year at UC Santa Barbara. That was an interesting spot for him to begin with. I do wonder if this is a move back to the power conference level.
Was he a gaucho at Santa Barbara? Is that right? Do we have that right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. He had a good year. He was like 15-point guy.
Yeah,
for them.
14.5 points, five or so rebounds a game.
Yeah, he had a good year. This is going to be the interesting thing. Another thing today, Devin Cambridge entered the portal after getting that hardship waiver, and then he's staying at Texas Tech now. So, I mean, again, there's just these – there's so many options out there in the portal. And this is where things get really interesting kind of early on, I think, for teams where kids are starting to make commitments and make decisions and going on visits. And it just – everybody does it at a different time period. It's not all like, hey, it's not like free agency in pro sports. You're like,
imagine in the pros, if you're in the playoffs and the other teams are, you know, players from other teams were able to declare free agency and sign while you still got the playoffs going, because that's what we've got right now.
It would be like if in the pros every player could opt into free agency whenever they wanted. It's like you have your contract.
Basically, opt into free agency as soon as the season's done.
That's right. It'd be like if every player had every player has their contracts, but then there's also an opt-in clause every season. A player can go retest the market.
Yeah, that's why this is so. It is so crazy.
And Johan, it's interesting. Johan is one of those players. You know, we were just talking about Trey, and in the old days, players might jump in search of playing time. You know, unproven college basketball players may jump from the SEC to a mid-major like the Big West. It's exactly what Traore did, banked on, but he didn't do it 2 years into his college basketball career, where, you know, with somebody.
Right.
And Trey played far more at Auburn than
Johan
Traore.
Yeah, Trey played, you know, between 15 and 20 minutes.
Often when you can't break onto the court as a major conference player.
When you're playing less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, and then a major conference team is looking and saying, well, we don't exactly know what we're getting in a player like this, mm-hmm. because he played so little at your major conference. Go get on the court somewhere, show that you belong in the major conference levels, and then you can get back into it. Trey Donaldson has shown that he's a major conference college basketball player. It's just, now he's got to find a new home.
All right, we're just underway here on the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, got Drew at the controls. We started off talking some basketball. We definitely can do that more. Some news today, an SEC opening. Will it be open by the end of the show? It may not be, but there may be another SEC opening when that happens.
Right, so when you ended the show yesterday, Eric Musselman was the head coach.
We knew Eric Musselman was interviewing, and that looked like he's probably leaving.
We knew Andy Enfield had left USC for SMU.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when SMU made, which was a kind of a surprising move to push out, was that Lanier? I think it was the former Georgia State coach. Lanier was at SMU. They fired him after 2 years and said the indication, and he had a pretty good year. This year, the question was, what's SMU doing? They thought they could make a major splash and bring in someone who has navigated NIL in a major mm-hmm. league way as they jump to the ACC. They bring in Andy Enfield, who has landed some pretty big fish in the NIL market before. USC pivots from Andy Enfield to Eric Musselman.
A lot of people going back to California.
A lot of people at both USC and UCLA wanted Musselman when he was the Nevada coach. Not surprising to see him. I mean, this is before he left for Arkansas when he had Nevada playing at a really high level. People thought he would make sense at a big time Pac-12 program. That was back when they were when there was a Pac-12. Now this is multiple years later, and yeah, now he's going to the Big Ten to coach USC, and yeah, Arkansas's job is open. Rumors that current Ole Miss and former Texas Tech, Texas, and Little Rock coach Chris Beard could be the next head coach at Arkansas. Reportedly, he's the favorite. I would go ahead and say, Bill, that if Chris Beard is your favorite at Arkansas, there's maybe a favorite on the board at Ole Miss.
Yeah, Will Wade.
Yeah, Will Wade, the McNeese State coach this season, had them in the tournament. Former LSU head coach Will Wade has also been rumored to be maybe Arkansas's fallback option if the Chris Beard stuff were to implode.
Oh, and Arkansas, I don't think it's Chris Beard or bust either.
Jerome Tang also.
Jerome Tang's been mentioned for that job. I've seen Buzz Williams mentioned for that job. So, like, you could see potentially a – I mean, you could see an SEC poaching that isn't necessarily Chris Beard leaving as well. I'm interested to see what all that how that checks out, because didn't Beard have like some sort of extension or something? They announced some sort of deal at the end of the year.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, so I mean, what does that end up looking like? There was another name I saw floated for Arkansas that I'm blanking on right now.
Beard, Tang, and Wade were the first three names I saw for Arkansas. I might need to source Trilly Donovan on Twitter, our good buddy Trilly with that one, because he's got the and he also, by the way, Trilly has started a women's basketball burner named Skim Milky, which
Chris Jans was the other one I saw at Arkansas.
Chris Jans isn't yet. Chris Jans, another SEC.
And then I saw coach. Will Wade, obviously, and then Bucky McMillan, which would be something.
I do think though,
if you see a domino effect, if one of the Mississippi schools came open, I would think McMillan would make a ton of sense.
I think so too. I think absolutely.
I wonder if there would be. I mean, the jump from, and we've seen coaches make mid-major jumps to the SEC before. I do wonder if the jump from Samford to the SEC would make some ADs nervous, where you might need to jump to a slightly higher mid-major conference and win a little bit before.
I don't know. I don't know that Ole Miss or Mississippi State. I think the reputation that Bucky McMillan has and is getting.
How about this? If you're State, Bucky or Andy Kennedy, who's also doing well, who's also winning, who comes with some SEC experience, also in town there at UAB. Although Bucky's exciting because of what the offense is
doing.
That's
right.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Andy Kennedy's name kicked around for some of these jobs too. Maybe not. He worked at it at Ole Miss. It already happened.
I just wonder if Mississippi State's going to take a guy that
was fired by Ole Miss
that didn't leave Ole Miss for a better job.
A guy who didn't. No, right. I think it would be. I mean, State's. I mean, they seem really thrilled with Jans to the point where it would be
it'd be a gut punch.
Yeah, it'd be a gut punch to lose Chris Jans somewhere else. But that doesn't look if he's Arkansas's guy, then it's gonna be tough to keep him.
Yeah, you're right. All right, we'll get to our first break here of the afternoon. Love for you to join in. You can do so by calling the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
So come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Orthopedic Clinic.
EU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. 23 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Have Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. Your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. We talked about some of the merry-go-round,
the carousel, baby.
Like a tilt-a-whirl.
Hot stove.
Is the way it is there with coaching and players.
Now, Bruce,
in
Bruce is staying at Auburn from what we understand.
He better be.
We have not heard Bruce's name tied to any of these jobs. Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, there was.
Is Calipari safe? Has that blown over?
Yeah, no, he's back. So. He's coming back.
It's just, I mean, and it would have been. I don't know. That would have been such a wild move for Kentucky after. Yeah. I mean, they were.
I've compared it to like in – you see this a lot more in, like, European soccer, where it's like, I have a manager – say if I have a manager who's really good and my team wins a lot, but we're not getting any better. And it feels like it's plateaued, maybe dropped off a little bit. Firing him isn't necessarily a sign is like, oh, he's bad and he can't do this job. It's just we need something new. We need something different.
You're describing SEC football in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
too, especially
you'll see
especially
some of
older,
that.
Older level.
The Mart Rick situation, I think, would probably be the best example that I can pull up from SEC football.
I mean, Gus, to a degree, would fit
to
that.
To a degree.
Would fit that, I suppose you could say. I mean, guys like Fulmer and Tuberville had a bad year.
Sure.
That sort of sparked it, but they had been models of consistency throughout their careers as well.
I think Mark Richt's a good example because it's like if you – like Calipari, it's like it's not like your team's bad. It's just you feel like you could be better because you're
and
Kentucky.
Yeah, Kentucky feels like they should be better.
Yeah, and that's the thing I've always liked in soccer because in soccer they have no – like like if you dip off a little bit, you're like, bye, goodbye. We're good with that. But it's just a different culture, obviously, and a different way of going about it.
Did you guys read about?
Are you going to talk
the
about
CST? Is that the
super the
well the
super,
athletic yeah. the athletic yeah the college yeah. sports tomorrow consortium the athletic just yeah. had the was it was
okay.
It, the Stuart Mandel piece
yeah,
in the athletic
yes.
about that
yes no, yeah
that,
I mean I
look, that, you know what that you know what that sounds like to me. When you start talking about, well, we got 70 guaranteed spots, and then we got this system for the group. You know what? If we're guaranteeing a top division of college football, ain't gonna be 70 spots in that top division. And so when there's quotes from Syracuse's chancellor and West Virginia's AD, it's like these are guys trying to guarantee themselves.
Right. Sure. They're wanting it to be 70 so they can be in there.
Yeah, because I think that number is going to be closer to 30. And it's if we go to a college football super
league. I think it's a scenario because if it's like, all right, who's in right now? Right? You know, if I'm in the ACC, I'm in. If I'm in the Big 12, I'm in. And so it's just like a format of doing that. For now.
Yeah. I mean, I still think the next
wave.
I'll
tell you what, 30, it'd be tough to just do 32 teams or something, though.
Two things about this. Number one, anytime anybody comes together and says, we've got to save football and I've got the idea for it, and it's a bunch of people who are like money folks usually, I'm like, okay, all right, slow down a little bit. Like, you know, I do think it's over.
It's just like on Shark
Tank.
Does
college football need to be fixed from its problems? Yes, but like I don't know if they're necessarily the ones to figure it out.
When they want something in perpetuity on Shark Tank, you're always like, I don't know if that sounds like a good deal, guys.
These guys wanting
a share of, you know, college football's media revenue in perpetuity.
Number two thing, I like part of it. A few years ago, I wrote a piece. It was a dumb thing you do in the summer. Actually, I think I might have done it in March. Now that I think about it, but I wrote a piece where it was like, hey. What if college basketball or college football was set up like the Champions League in soccer? And I was like, okay, let's just pull it out. One of the things about that system that I liked is that it was a way to get back to conferences being conferences again, and not just like, hey, here's 20 teams that are on a league. It was back to, you know,
regional
10 teams in a conference. Everybody plays everybody, and you get back to that. I like that part of that idea because I do think, like, in college football, everybody hates NIL and everybody hates the transfer portal. Like, you know, I like the concepts behind them. I like the fact that players are getting paid. I like the fact that players have freedom of movement. Problem is, it's just out of control because there's no one in charge.
You love the transfer portal when you need 50 players all of a sudden.
Sure.
If you can get them.
My thing.
If you've got the resources to get them.
The thing about modern college football that I've disliked the most is the super conference. And the SEC started it, but like the Big Ten and the ACC are about to make it even worse because it's like we're about to have back-to-back years where Auburn doesn't play LSU. We're going to have back-to-back years where Auburn doesn't play Ole Miss.
Georgia has still never gone to Texas A&M. Yeah. Still has never gone to Texas A&M.
And so find a way to make it true conferences again. I like smaller conferences and just figure it out. So I like that system. And it was like, we'll do smaller conferences, and then that feeds, like, if you win, you know, and you runner up and all that, it all determined on the field. There's no committee involved, which I like that
part. This would turn into a 16-team playoff with with two teams from each league, I would guess.
And that was the format.
Because I didn't get to read the whole article. One thing I was wondering:
eight conferences, champions, and runners up, and get 16-team playoff.
Well, you don't need a championship game then.
I don't know if there would be a championship game.
Why would you play a championship game?
And that's
if you're
my
both
other
in?
Thing. Yeah. The problem is that they're not going to. Part of the reason why the super conferences are going to be allowed to exist and thrive, because they're not going to get rid of conference title games.
Nope.
And so it can come to a point where it's like, we're going to get into a scenario with these 16 and 18 and 20-team conferences where it's like, well, these are our two teams that are making in the conference title game. And somebody's going to be like, wait, why are they in and not us? Like, it's going to get to that point because you can't have everybody play.
Right, because everybody can't play. That's where a 10-team conference
Robin,
where everybody plays.
Oh, man.
You've got head-to-head.
You got
so, I mean, you know, it comes down to it. You know, if you're third because you lost that tiebreaker with the number two team, too bad.
Yeah,
too bad. You're out.
You know exactly what you have to do.
All right. Again, I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing, but my question was when it was talking about the players would be paid by. Didn't it say the players would be paid by the conference?
That's one of the things that they believe. I guess if the Syracuse chancellor goes into more detail about this, one of the reasons they think a plan like this could be necessary is because there is a belief that lawsuits current and that could come down the line if the NCAA were to lose could put both the NCAA and the power conferences in financially untenable situations. This model abandons the conferences and says you're leaving your conferences and your current media deals behind and you're signing up with us.
So this conference would determine pay scales?
Yes. And they're also talking about not having an even media split. So you'd have to convince the powers, your Alabamas and Ohio States and Notre Dames, that they'd be getting...
Not having or having?
No, there would not be an even split. So those teams would get more than teams in this system at the bottom of the... The name brands, the superpowers, would have a larger share of the media deal in the CST plan.
Who determines
plan.
How much each that's superpower an,
that's
gets?
Probably the mysterious people. The biggest obstacle here is that the Big Ten and the SEC aren't interested at all. Like that they talk about that. It's just a brief paragraph in the Stuart Mandel piece, but it's like they can't even get a meeting with the Big Ten and the SEC, in part because this plan involves leaving your media deals behind, and the SEC and the Big Ten don't want to be taking meetings with people who say, oh, yeah, you need to tell ESPN and Fox to hit the bricks and renegotiate.
Or start over, yeah.
And the thing about this system is that it brings everybody back, like all of the power conferences back to a level playing field, like everybody – and they're not going to want to do that because if you're the SEC and the Big Ten, you're like, we've got the edge.
We broke this. Yeah, they broke it strategically. I mean, the fact like
all this is about money, and that sucks. But like, it is what it's coming down to. Right?
Conference realignment has been for the last 25 years or so. I mean, you could trace it back to Florida State and Penn State joining their respective leagues. Like, conference realignment has been about building your league into the best possible football league to position itself for media rights deals from TV networks. And what we've seen, I mean, it's destroyed. Oklahoma and Texas leaving the Big 12 put that conference in a really tough spot. USC and UCLA leaving put that conference in a tough spot. I maintain the next battle we're going to see in conference realignment is going to be when perennial champions look at the conference and say, why are we getting an equal share as the teams that never win anything? And then you get a really interesting
spot.
That's what Florida State and Clemson are doing, and I think it's coming.
Texas did with the Big 12.
And I think it's coming to the Big 10 and the SEC, too. I think you're absolutely going to be in a situation where Alabama and Georgia say, well, why are we splitting money equally with Mississippi State and Vanderbilt? Ohio State and Michigan could say, why are we splitting money equally with teams in the Big 10 that never win anything? And that's how you get your Super League. That's how you get the superpowers deciding, you know what, these other teams don't belong in the conference anymore, or these other teams don't belong with an equal share as us. And that's how you whittle away the have nots go away because the haves need to have.
Again,
it's the chase for unending growth. Yeah. Right? It tends to ruin things sometimes.
Yeah. And again, it's the same thing that happened in Europe with soccer when they tried to do the Super League and everybody, all the fans revolted because it was like, hey, you know, it's about tradition. It's about, hey, we like, yes, you know, I'm trying to think of a good Brighton and Hove Albion are not as big
Queens Park Rangers
as Manchester City, but we always play these teams, and it's like it's important. Like, you know, there is a sense of cohesion and community, but like when you're all chasing who can make the most money for themselves, that's where it gets out of line. Yes, traditionally, Auburn and Mississippi State on the football field are not the same, right? They're not. They're Auburn's won more championships. They've been. They're a bigger football program, but they play each other constantly and like play. I mean, State was the second most played team on Auburn in Auburn's history because of the Alabama gap. Like that matters. That matters, and it's going to be really weird these next couple of years where it's like you don't play LSU, you don't play either Mississippi schools. You're talking about a border state that you don't even that you used to play every single year, both teams every single year for decades and decades. You ain't got them anymore, and then you got LSU, who in some people's minds. Third biggest rival to a certain generation, well, to a certain section
over,
of the fan base.
Over the last 30-plus years since the SEC went to divisions. Because Auburn didn't play Ole Miss or LSU, really, on a regular basis until then.
92 was when they started playing Ole Miss annually. Yep. But, they've played Mississippi State like pretty much regularly since the 50s.
Oh, it's before then.
Yeah.
Since before
then. It's one of those things where, like, I looked it up where it was like, the last time Auburn had a season of football where they didn't play Ole Miss, LSU, or Mississippi State before what is going to be this year, I think it was like 1920 something. Like it was just like it's prehistoric in terms of. And again, yes, I get why like people are like, hey, those other teams don't bring in as much money as we do, so we need to come on, kind of make our own. I get the appeal of let's kick Vanderbilt out and bring in Clemson or Florida State. I get that. But also, it's like, if we're going with haves and have-nots and tiers, like, it is a lot smaller than people think it is. Like, Auburn's in a very good position, but they're not the biggest.
Auburn's in the middle. If you're talking 30 or so, Auburn's in the middle. Auburn's
Auburn is a tier two program. There's a lot in the Power Five that are in tier three and tier four and tier five.
You're not kidding.
And
but you got to be real careful about where you're sitting when you start saying, "Hey, let's kick those teams out." It's like, you sure?
You better know you're in the top two.
You sure you got to see.
And like you'll get those from time to time. We'll be like, well, why we got Arkansas in the league? And it's like, dude, why we got Vanderbilt in the league? Like, dude, you're at Arkansas. Like let's be real about what's going on right now. Like it gets smaller and smaller. And the end game, I think. So there's the Super League and everyone, when you have the Syracuse Chancellor coming in and say, I think we should do, you're trying to protect your spot. Mm-hmm. And they can't get a meeting with the SEC or the Big Ten because the SEC and the Big Ten, their end game is
they
like,
don't need them.
This is us.
Yeah.
There is going to come a day.
Super League era is here. Well, and it's our league and it's their league and it's nobody else's league.
Like, that's what it's going to end up being. That is 100% what it's going to end up being. It's going to be AFC and NFC, and that's what this is going to look like. And
it's going to be Fox and ESPN.
Just wait until they start kicking teams out. Because that's the grant of rights and all that will be. But, like, if you came to the SEC tomorrow and said, hey, there's a way that you could add Clemson and Florida State into your league and all that comes with it, and all you got to do, y'all can just kick out. You don't get to keep Missouri or Vanderbilt anymore. You just got to get rid of them. And they're like, yep, where do we sign? We got it. 100%. Because if they did it all over again, like them adding Missouri back in the day, A&M's been fine. A&M is culturally very SEC, and like it makes sense. They fit, especially now with Texas and Oklahoma in the league. They make a ton of sense. Missouri, like them adding Missouri because like, well, we got this nice network coming up, and we want to be able to make sure we get in the St. Louis TV market. You know how that sounds like it came from the 1800s. Yeah. Like that is such an outdated concept now. And if they had to do it all over again,
the dry goods store,
to do it all over again. If any of y'all have ever been to Missouri, if you've ever been to the campus of the University of Missouri, Missouri is a Big Ten school that never got to be in the Big Ten.
They are.
That's what they do not feel like the SEC at all. And I feel like Texas and Oklahoma are going to jump right in with both feet.
Yeah, we can continue this. We'd love your thoughts. We're way behind. Need to get to our bottom of the hour break a little late. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, and let's get to the drive hotlines, sponsored by Skybar and Jerry. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I was under the impression that when the SEC is cutting up the money, and say there's 12 teams in the conference, that there were 13 slices of the pie. And so, like, the team that played in a bowl game got two cuts. And, you know, there were certain incentives if you play a national championship game. Or am I mistaken about that? Or
That's the way it's been as far as bowl cuts are concerned. The team participating would used to get an extra share. I don't know if that's changed. Not that I know of. I didn't realize that if it had changed, Jerry.
Well, I was just wondering, you know, they do get a little benefit.
Yeah, you do, for being the team that is bringing that money in.
Right. Well, interesting conversation. Enjoy it.
Yeah, appreciate it, Jerry.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they've changed that. I mean, remember we were talking about the tournament, and the teams in the tournament get a little more than everybody else's share. So, I mean, it makes sense.
That's one of the things, and the shares that go in the tournament, because the way the NCAA tournament works is when your team wins, you get another share of the second round, and your team, you know, that's there's financial incentives to keep winning for schools and for conferences, which is one of the reasons why people are sort of they're nervous about the plan to expand the field and guarantee more spots in the tournament to major conference teams. You know, people talk about expanding the field from 64 to what was the number? Sankey tossed out 76. I want to say was a number that Sankey had mentioned. And some folks think that 76 would mean 12 play-in games for the 16 seeds, the 15 seeds, and the 14 seeds, and then you seed the rest of the tournament, and that'd be a way to sort of chisel one bid leagues out of the, you know, put more of them in the play-in game round, mm-hmm, rather than in the actual round of 64, which is, you know, it's, I don't know, especially this year. Granted, we were on the business end of one of them with Yale, but those upsets in the first round are one of the great things about the NCAA tournament. Like those games where an Oakland beats a Kentucky or a Yale takes down a top 12, top 16 seed on the board. Like that's one of the great things about this tournament. And so I would hope that steps to reduce the likelihood of first round upsets by having fewer one bid leagues in a position to pull off those upsets. I would hope that plan is defeated if it ever is seriously considered. But it does. I do understand why they would want more spots for major conference teams.
We were just talking about. I mean, it makes sense. It's not just football. I mean, in everything, in everyone. I mean, you want more representation from your guys, and it's also a little more money for your league.
So you guys got to watch some practice on Tuesday.
A lot of
pivoting to some football. Here, as you guys got, yeah, Bill had to leave early because he has a show to do, but you guys got to watch.
I stuck around for a little while, a little longer than usual, but I mean, I left at around a quarter till, and I mean, golly, you guys were out there about for the whole practice, weren't you?
Yeah, I walked off the field at like 6:15.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So yeah,
you wrote earlier today about some of the guys who mm-hmm. have improved their position on the team over the last few weeks. You know, as far as I use the Bill Cameron depth chart as sort of a compass for these things, you know, as a North Star. But guys who were, it was more of an open question as to how much playing time they could receive or what their role could be, who have improved themselves. So who stands out to you, Justin, as a guy who has done what he needs to do over these last few weeks to put himself in a position to contribute this
fall? Yeah, the first name that comes to mind for me is Champ Anthony. I think if Auburn had to play a football game today, Champ Anthony would be your starting nickel. And, you know, that's a position. I asked Hugh Freeze about it on Tuesday about the secondary, and he said, I think that's the group that's taken the biggest step forward in terms of giving him more confidence because there's a lot of unknown back there. I think you're looking at a corner group of, Keontae Scott and Kay and Lee. I think Colton Hood would be your third with your third corner with a real shot of potentially even starting at some point this year.
That's a name. It seems like everybody mentions Colton Hood.
I think you want to have at least three outside corners that you can trust all game long, and I think Colton Hood would be one of those guys. But nickel is, you know, you'll play some guy like Keontae will play some nickel. Other guys will slide in and play some nickel. But Champ Anthony looks like he's best at nickel. That's kind of been his home. So he's the one for me that I think, you know, played a little bit last year. Not a ton, but got on the field, and I think this year you're starting to see him get a lot more confidence. He's a young JUCO transfer as well, so he's got a little bit more time left to grow and develop. And really well this spring.
When we got to talk to Crime Dog during when they made the coaches available, Crime Dog talked about how valuable, really for Lee as well, but for Champ Anthony and Kay and Lee, like those two guys, the experience they got on the field last year. You didn't want. I mean, it was tough to pull a Nehemiah Pritchett off the field or a Jalen Simpson off the field to get snaps for Kay and Lee or Champ Anthony last year. But it's really valuable now that Auburn did that, because these aren't guys that have barely seen a college football field or haven't seen one at all, having to step in to a very important role for an SEC defense. They're fairly experienced second year players at the college football level, which is when you lose a Pritchett or a Simpson who's the corner, the Oregon transfer, DJ James. I mean, when you lose guys like that to the NFL, like it is so valuable to have young players who got some experience. And we heard a little more about J.C. Hart.
As a matter of fact, Hugh Freeze mentioned him, and then somebody today mentioned him. One of the players that we were talking with today mentioned JC.
JC, I think, is a guy that has really raised his stock as well. That secondary's is an interesting spot.
Kite, I guess, would also be in that
Spooty,
mix as well.
Yeah, he'll be one of those guys that I think will be in the mix this year to get some playing time. At safety,
there's so many guys
back there at safety. You feel good about Bug Thompson being one of your starters, and then you look
Sylvester
at
Sylvester Smith.
We saw it the other day out there at practice. Sylvester Smith was out there with the first team a ton.
A guy we weren't talking about when spring practice started, in Sylvester Smith. Like that's a player who, if you talk about somebody who is firmly on the Bill Cameron depth chart right now, I don't know where. Like I don't know where he was.
Yeah, he was a guy I put in my story today. Yeah, Sylvester Smith, guy getting really good first team reps. Him and Terrence Love, I think both of those guys are. But then, like, look, you also have Caleb Wooden, and you've got a variety of guys that you have some transfers back there that you can lean on. But yeah, Sylvester Smith's been the guy that I think you've heard about the most, and kind of seen the most pop. I'm not surprised this guy looks like he could be a starter this year, because I think that's part of the reason why they went out and got him. But I thought Robert Lewis has been you hear him consistently as one of the best receivers they have out there. A lot of attention on Cam Coleman, obviously. A lot of attention on some of the guys Auburn has coming back. But Robert Lewis is a dude who caught a lot of balls last season for a lot of yards. He's an interesting piece of the puzzle, because I wrote about this for the mailbag tomorrow. People asking about, like, hey, where do these receivers fit in? Robert Lewis is sub-6 foot, but he played the vast majority of his snaps at Georgia State on the outside. With injuries on the outside this season, or this spring for Auburn, you've seen him play more on the outside. He looks like he can hold his own out there. So I would definitely say Robert Lewis is in that.
Auburn has more options inside,
yes,
too, right?
Oh, yeah. Exactly. They've got more guys that look like slot receivers.
Yeah, and I think Robert Lewis is very similar to me to Caleb Burton, where you're looking at him as, like, they, you know, traditionally you would look at him as an inside guy, but they can play outside.
He's a little thicker, though. I mean, he just looks. I mean, that's because probably he's a couple years older.
Yeah, probably an inch or two shorter than a Coy Moore, but very similar in terms of, you know, what kind of skills. Both those guys more physical than you would necessarily think for dudes their size. I'm trying to think of another one that jumped out to me. There's been some guys that have been like, where you've been like mentioned and you're like, oh wow, that's a name I wouldn't kind of expect into. Malik Blockton, I think, is a big one. You're talking about a 3-star defensive lineman who comes in but has already turned some heads. You love to see that.
What's going on behind McLeod? at that position.
Kids.
On the end.
Yeah. And some really good kids as well.
It's kids that are getting their names mentioned. I mean, because I know Amaris Williams
has played a ton with the first team here recently. I think they're kind of putting Jalen McLeod on a pitch count. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't play a ton in the 8A game because it's just so important to keep him healthy. Mm-hmm. We saw what that slow start did for him last year.
With players like Asante and McLeod and Keys, they've played so much college football already. And they've been through so many off seasons as a player. I do wonder if there's a question.
You make him a driver too.
How much contact you need to see from those three guys between now and the start of the
yeah,
season?
Yeah, and I wonder about Dorian Mossy. I mean, Eugene and Peyton both talked about him today.
Yeah, the group behind Jalen it is kids. And they're really good, though. And I think if you have a guy like Jalen McLeod that you know you're going to play a good bit, it's a good opportunity for a guy. Like Amaris Williams is – and he's a guy who can kick down to kind of traditional defensive end, hand in the dirt kind of stuff with Keldrick Falk, like that kind of role. But Amaris Williams has had a great spring. Everybody talks about him kind of in a different tone than most freshmen. And then Jamonte Waller, I think in terms of just pure pass rushing, he's been really impressive. The pass rush has done really well this spring, according to a lot of folks, including Hugh Freeze. And I'm not surprised with it. Just you get him, Joe Phillips. There were a couple of plays. I don't know if Bill was out there when there were a couple plays.
I didn't see.
There were a couple of plays that Joe Phillips made in the backfield the other day during 11-on-11, where it was like, oh, you're big and you're running that fast. That's pretty
special
to watch.
He likes it. When we talked to him the other day, I mean, he really likes being out there on the edge. We've got to get to our final break to wrap things up here in hour number one. We've got plenty to talk about. Love for you to chime in. You got any questions or thoughts? 334-321-1390 here on the Thursday Drive.
The Lee County Environmental Services Department will be hosting
NAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
That is the end of hour number one. That was pretty good timing. I mean, it timed right into the music there. We're just getting going. We've got another hour to go here on the Thursday Drive. Come on in and join us, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Or you can text us. And the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors is 334-564-1840. We're back in just a couple with hour number two of the Thursday Drive.
The sports capital of Alabama, this is the Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this beautiful Thursday as we are heading up to a big weekend here in Auburn. I mean, we've got baseball, softball, men's and women's tennis, and A-Day all this weekend. And the weather looks great. It looks like we're going to have more of what we have right now. It's going to be chilly at night for the evening events.
In the 30s at sunrise tomorrow morning? Do I have that right?
Maybe. Low 40s for sure.
Yeah.
Low 40s for sure. Some outlying areas could be in the upper 30s.
How about that as we get into the second week of – as we approach the second week of April?
That's to go ahead and kill those plants, kill the blooms. You know, you see the azaleas are just gorgeous in full bloom. So many things are blooming. Let's get back into the 30s to go ahead and put an end to some of that.
I am very excited to see because I feel like we're coming up on it. I don't think I've ever been in Auburn for a cicada season. I believe Auburn has the – we were talking about
this
earlier.
I'm not nearly as excited about that as I am some other things.
I believe, and I think –
woohoo, cicada season.
I think this is a 13 and 17-year cicada. I think this is the year where they overlap and they are both – like it's the rare, you know, however many it would take for the 17-year cicadas and the 13-year cicadas to both emerge in the same – breeding season, but I think that's what we're supposed to have over the next couple of months.
I'm more excited about the eclipse next Monday.
That's right. You got which we should have. We're not that far away from the.
We ought to be able to notice it.
Have you seen the?
And my wife came home with some glasses today with the eclipse glasses. So
I think it's an infographic of either hotel reservations or Airbnb reservation, but it's this line.
Oh, yeah.
It's this straight line across the country where you can't get a hotel.
This one's from Texas to Maine,
yeah,
right?
There's a straight. I'll see if I can pull it up for you, but it's people traveling to be in the path of the eclipse and
I heard earlier, and I didn't hear the answer. I heard this question on a show this morning. It's like, what is the point at which the eclipse from a few years ago and this one cross? It's somewhere in mid-America. Somewhere in Middle America.
Here's the stretch of where Airbnbs are sold out right
and
now.
Remember, and remember, it was a red stretch and stuff last time.
A red stretch from the Mexican border in Texas, stretching all the way pretty much to Maine. There's a straight line of bookings where you there's crazy surges and everything. It's because it's in the path.
That's
the path of the eclipse.
That's what's happening on Monday. But before we get to Monday, like I said, a lot of things going on this weekend. We've been talking. Some spring football and players that have been standouts or that we've either seen or heard making moves here this spring. Justin, as we'll stick with football here for a little bit. I think everybody really seems upbeat about this spring. Players, coaches, I mean, everybody seems to really be pleased with how this spring has gone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think this was a spring that it was just kind of a reset button for Auburn. You talk a lot about familiarity with the coaching staff, guys feeling a little bit more comfortable with what they're doing, even with the new stuff, even with the new defense and some of the changes they've made, schematically. It's just this has sounded like a good quality spring for Auburn. We'll see how much that carries into the fall. But when you hear it, when you hear about, like, hey, there are days where the offense gets the job done and then the defense fires back and has a better day and they go back and forth, and you're not hearing, well, one side of the ball is dominating over the other, I think that's a good, you know, you can see the positives on both ends. And players today were talking like, we still have a long way to go. And I think, Auburn is still a team that's not expected to make a ton of noise in the regular season. You know, most people have them around 7-8 win team. But when you've had three straight losing seasons, to have a spring where everybody feels like they're on the same page and there's some momentum building around you, I think that's a really good sign. I also think it doesn't hurt that you signed a really good recruiting class and you've been able to see some of the fruits of that already start to form with guys like Cam Coleman and Amaris Williams and Jamonte Waller, like having the springs they have, Bryce Kane, having the springs that they had. That's a really, really good sign because we all know that, you know, the rebuild for Auburn to get back to being a contender year in and year out, that's going to come through recruiting and development and keeping those guys around. You haven't seen the on-field results yet, but, you know, you're starting to think that the talent level's raised.
Oh, no question about that.
There's no question the talent level's raised. That doesn't guarantee you that you're going to win more ball games, but it's usually a pretty good prerequisite to being a better team. And I think you're starting to see the amount of new guys, the amount of younger guys, even guys who were here last year, making jumps in the depth chart, making big-time impacts. You can tell it's like, yeah, this is what Auburn needed, because for a couple of years they had taken a big step back in talent for what a team needs to be to compete in the SEC.
Love for you to join in. It's hour number two of the Thursday Drive with Bill, Dan, Justin, and Drew at the controls. And the second hour of the show, as usual, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, at number 334-321-1390. And Spectre gets us started. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, guys. Sounds like we got the crew back in town.
Yeah. It's been a while. Well, I mean, you know, Dan's been busy.
Hey,
of course,
Spectre.
Justin was traveling the world following Auburn Athletics, so we never knew when everybody was going to be here.
Listen, okay, A-Day's coming up. So tell me, if you can, have we decided on any ones and twos yet?
I feel like they I feel like Auburn's got a good idea of what, especially on offense. I feel like offensively there's a good set of like ones there. There's going to be some movement around, especially on defense. But I think you can start to see kind of a clear, you know.
They're not going to release a depth chart, but it's funny how Hugh Freeze said, well, no, we know the orange and we know the blue.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's pretty much the guys who are going to play the most and then the next guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when are we going to know who's on the orange and who's on the blue then?
I think Saturday you're going to have a pretty decent idea.
Yeah, you see who's in uniform on Saturday.
And the thing there, Spectre, about this game is they're doing it like they did last year. It's offense versus defense. So, like, all the offense is going to be, you know, trying to, working together, basically. And you're not going to have to figure out, hey, is that guy on the orange team or the blue team right now? Like, they're doing the whole, you know, defense starts with a 27-0 lead. Offense has got to catch them. And I think that's a better one to kind of, like, get everybody involved. But, yeah, you'll be able to see those first couple of drives, you know, kind of who they feel most confident about early.
Because the other thing they're going to do is the offense wants to catch up, and the defense doesn't want to allow points. So you're going to see the best against the best. I asked Coach Freeze that the other day, and he said they're going to go – best against best, and then when they sub, they expect the other side to sub as well. So you'll have an idea of who's running with what group.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether to wear my orange shirt or my blue shirt.
you know what? So, you can't choose wrong.
Yeah, that's
right. You'll be wearing the right colors no matter what. Unless it's like a Mets.
Be white, to be honest.
Unless it's a Mets uniform or something, in which case.
Well,
you know,
I got a tie-dye shirt that's orange and blue, so I guess I'll just
do it. There you go.
I can see, look for Spectre's going to be the one in the tie-dye at A-Day. So if he's ever said anything that upsets you, is your chance to confront him. Spectre, I would say, as far as like who's a first teamer, who's a second teamer, like right now, there are a couple of guys where it feels highly likely that they're a starter week one for Auburn on both sides of the ball. I would say offensively, Peyton Thorne looks to have a grip on QB1 at the moment. You feel like Jarquez, ending last season as your starting running back, still in the pole position there. Rivaldo is number one at tight end right now. I feel like all five offensive line spots at the moment have at least a clubhouse leader, if not a guy you would really expect to be your starter. So it's not as though every position is wide open or anything like that. But you know, there's a mix of spots that are close to concrete and some spots that are still up in the air.
All right, then. Sounds good. I got to run. Sorry,
all right,
guys.
Great. No, good hearing from you.
Great stuff, Spectre. Yeah. I mean, would you agree with that? All five offensive line spots right now have a clubhouse leader.
Oh, yeah. I think so. I think left to right, it's going to be Percy Lewis, Dylan Wade, Connor Liu, Jeremiah Wright, and Tutal.
Yeah. I mean, that looks
like Miller.
And it's a – we hear it from Jake Thornton. We've heard it from other offensive line coaches in the past. When you have a starting lineup that is close to complete – early in the spring, it gives those five guys a chance to work together and be the best unit possible. That's not to say somebody else couldn't emerge.
No, they need seven or eight. Have seven or eight because somebody's going to get banged up some. But Jeremiah Wright's a guy that's gotten a lot of credit for his improvement this spring, Justin.
Yeah, the switch has been flipped for him, and Hugh Freeze talked about how it's everything with him. It's the way he practices. It's the way he prepares. It's the way he approaches things. It's the way he eats. Jeremiah Wright was another guy I mentioned in my story today. If you look at Jeremiah Wright last season, he was the third guard, and he played some in about every game. There were a couple games where he didn't play much, but never played more than 40 snaps very often during the season. They just felt like he was a guy that they could use. They couldn't trust him for a whole game, basically. And so if he can get closer to being that guy, he's a real weapon. And we talk about this Auburn offensive line. Last season, they did a pretty good job run blocking. There's a lot of metrics that show you that they made a good improvement. Auburn ran the ball. Auburn was a top 20 team running against ranked opponents last year. Pass protection still needs to be really, improved and addressed. You hope that some of the new pieces can help with that. But when I think Jeremiah Wright, I think about him burying dudes
in
run blocking. And so if he's that guy more consistently, you could see Auburn even continue to take that step forward. And so it's no surprise. I don't know how long you were out there at practice to see it on Tuesday. But pass pro with the pass rush being improved, you know, that is a work in progress. Mm-hmm. They're throwing run blocking doesn't seem to be a problem.
No, I think this team's going to be able to run.
They should be able to run the ball really well. Some of that comes with some questions about Auburn's defensive line. You know, there's always every time you talk about a pro in spring practice, there's always a con for the other side of the ball. But I do think this unit, Jake Thornton did a good job of this unit kind of getting them on track, especially in run blocking last year. I expect them to continue to do that moving forward. And it helps to be blocking for guys like Jarquez Hunter and Tamari Austin and Jeremiah Cobb and Brian Batiste. So, like, you have a lot of flexibility there.
334-321-1390. Back to the drive hotline. And Brett is next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I think it was today, some updated heights and weights. I noticed they list Bryce Kane under 160. Is he, I know they've, you know, people have said good things about him, but has he done anything in contact work?
Yes, I mean he's practicing in contact. He is just very light. He is one of those guys that you definitely are going to want to see him. You'll put on some weight, put on some muscle in the system. He's just a very slender kid.
Yeah, but he doesn't look like he's a twig.
No. I think he's, you know, he's a very athletic player for sure.
He's made some. He apparently made a couple of big plays in the scrimmage on Saturday.
His speed's really big. I'll tell you this, Brett. Like I noticed that as well when I was writing something up recently about Bryce Kane. He doesn't look that small on the field.
No.
But yeah, that is something. He is definitely one of the lighter players on the team.
I mean, you see some guys and you look at their arms and legs and you think, oh my goodness, this guy's going to get killed. Bryce doesn't
Chad
bring
Rosario
that to mind.
Yeah,
that's true.
In basketball.
Is he about 5'10"? Is that right?
That's probably right.
5'10", 5'11", I think is where they have him.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it, Brett.
And I'll tell you one thing about Bryce Kane. It's easy to see this in practice. Dude is a burner.
Yeah.
He just moves a little differently than a lot of guys do. And and they got some fast guys on this team. But he is a pure burner. That's what they knew what they were getting when they got him out of high school. It was just like, go watch his high school film. It's just him running by a lot of folks.
Before we get to, I know we got to take a break. I know we're going to get to Jay when we come back. Since you guys are talking about Bryce Kane and other speed guys, what's the word on the return game? Like, I know that's something Auburn, I don't know how much you guys have been able to see.
I've worked on it a lot since we've been out there.
I haven't seen it.
Because I do feel like you have a lot of candidates out there. And that's a spot where, I mean, maybe Keontae remains a primary piece of what Auburn's been doing as punt returner. But at the same time, now he's your lead corner. Like, do you have reservations about having your lead corner as your punt returner? Could one of these new guys make a push for that?
That's a good question. They do have a lot of candidates. All right, Jay, hang on. We need to get to our first break. You'll be up when we come back. You can get in line behind him, 334-321-1390, here on the Thursday Drive.
Chandler here from University 8.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Jones hasn't yet. Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. 20 minutes after 5 o'clock with Bill, Dan, and Justin here in the studio. Drew at the controls, and let's get back to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Jay is up next. Hey, Jay.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good to hear from you, Jay.
Great show. I have two questions. First question, and I'll be real brief. I remember last year when there was talk about playing these intra-squad spring day games like the A-Day in Auburn and so on and so forth. I won't mention the other schools. They really do not matter to me, but Auburn. But that's just a joke, a college sports joke. But I remember there was talks about Auburn playing maybe another school within the state of a lesser. I don't want to say quality, but of a smaller.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's something that Hugh Freeze brought up a year ago. He was asked about it. We talked about it a little bit yesterday with Don Dunn and Jason Caldwell. And I love the idea. I mean, even if you did do it like a jamboree, but, I mean, one of the things that Hugh Freeze was talking about is, you know, yeah, play in some of the smaller schools, keep it in-state, be a money maker that could be a fundraiser for charity. I mean, there are a lot of positives in there. One of the things that I know Coach Freeze likes about it is he said, I'd only have to worry about 11 players at a time on the field. You don't have 22 guys. You've got your 11, plus the players would be a whole lot more motivated to go out and play against somebody other than the same guys they practice against every day.
Now, when doing that, I know no one wants to get their star players hurt or injured. How would they control that aspect of it?
I wonder if you well, couple,
how,
couple
how do you control it in a spring game?
Right. I wonder if in that like suppose we get to a world where you'll see intra squad is it inter versus intra?
Intra
squad scrimmages where you'd have another school coming in and scrimmaging that. If you ever got there, I do wonder how much of the star players you would see, if any, for these teams. I do wonder if they'd be load management would start to be a factor, or just the risk of losing a guy. I also,
heck,
I
imagine, you know what? I would enjoy
probably
watching.
Probably not seeing contact with quarterbacks.
I would enjoy watching the second group against somebody else, just to get them some experience and to see them.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe like the second string versus another school like a UAB or
play Bama State or you know, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, my next question is just changing gears a little bit to men's basketball. I know we're in the portal season for men's basketball, and Johnny Broome, he had a pretty good season. He really did, and he really improved. Has there been any talk? And we've lost possibly Trey Donaldson in the portal
and KD.
Has there been any talk of getting possibly another big man, not to run Johnny off or anything like that, but when that day happens, when he says, hey, I'm ready to leave and take my talents elsewhere, is there any talk about getting another big man that can really play defense, can really get some rebounds, and can really get some putback shots in the paint?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so far, you know, in the portal, if you look at the people that Auburn has been linked to in the portal, just reportedly, most of your bigs have been power forwards. You know, you're replacing Jalen Williams. You're going to need, you know, maybe somebody to help out at that position. You know, even if you like Chaney Johnson coming back, only been a couple of centers they've been linked to, and I think part of that is because. I think they're waiting to see what happens.
They're putting every effort into trying to get Jani back.
So I think that's the thing is like when there's a decision made on Broome one way or another, I think you will see like if he leaves, I think you will see Auburn really attack the big man part of the portal a little bit more. But as it stands right now, like Bill said, I think they are really wanting to push. Hey, we got a spot here ready for you. We're not going to go get anybody else. We want to build it around you one more time. So I think that's why you haven't heard Auburn as much in the portal. But yes, if they lose Jani Broome to the NBA or to the pro ranks, I would definitely expect Auburn try to go after somebody in the portal at center. They just haven't been linked to very many of them yet. And the guys they have been linked to have been guys they've recruited in the past, so they already have relationships with. Cliff Omiyuri's been the big one there, the Rutgers big man.
But I would say, Jay, that that Auburn would really, really, really like to know Jani's decision as soon as possible those guys just aren't going to be hanging out there waiting case Auburn comes calling.
I don't think it's going to string out as long as it did last year.
No, it can't.
Yeah, it can't.
All right, guys, thank y'all for the questions and answers. Enjoy the show.
Absolutely. Appreciate the call, Jay.
Yeah, the big men, I think, is kind of been the big thing there, like the power forwards. We've seen them linked to, you know, types of players that remind you a lot of Jalen Williams or some guys Auburn's had in the past. I haven't done a refresh of a lot of those guys here recently, but early on, you know, they reached out to like Jerry Dang, who has a connection with JT Thor. It looks very similar to JT Thor as a player. Some stretch fours from the mid-major levels, some rebounders. It's been a lot of guards. It's been a lot of guards and backcourt guys, which makes sense with what Auburn's got.
Saw where Bay Fall went into the portal as well.
Bay Fall going into the portal, that'd be an interesting one.
He didn't play much at all.
I would think that whole Arkansas roster could be in jeopardy of breaking apart.
I would expect anytime your coach leaves, I would expect the team to check out the portal.
And they had already had a lot of guys going in the portal. Devo Davis is in the portal. Layden Blocker was in the portal already. I mean, there's going to be a lot of those guys. I think one of the Mitchells is in, maybe both of them. But, yeah, like it's going to be turning. And again, we talked about it at the beginning of the show. I'm very interested to see what Arkansas does on top of that. Because, you know, Jerome Tang was mentioned as an example. You look at it, like the Big 12 is – like I would normally see like, okay, it makes sense for a Big 12 coach to leave for the SEC in football, especially with the way things are going. Man, the Big 12 is just so good at basketball right now and positioned to be that way for a while that I do wonder.
Arizona coming in.
Yeah,
With Arizona joining the league
wonder if a coach like Jerome Tang would see his future in Kansas State with maybe some more money, some more security at Kansas State might be better off than trying to jump into the SEC. What they've got,
tough to turn down Arkansas though. If Arkansas decides you're their guy, you know, money wise, like if you're thinking about financials and
Arkansas
things like that,
Arkansas does have some resources.
Like that is a place where
I would think they'd have more resources. That's than not K-State.
Like you could be no Kansas State could be an excellent program like for the foreseeable future.
Sure.
I mean they've won under Jerome Tang. I do wonder.
State's a better program right now. I think Arkansas.
Oh, I do too. I just think Arkansas.
Yes, they have a lot of resources. Yeah. They got a big old arena. They have a fan base that cares about basketball. But
they're in the SEC versus the Big 12, which also it seems like it's going to matter more as
later on. I mean, there was a lot of talk today about this Arkansas job, and I think it's an awesome job because it's at SEC school. Period. But when you start comparing it to other big name, like big basketball jobs, I start to be like, all right, guys, it's not. It's not the 80s. It's not the 90s. Like this is different. And yes, Muss had a couple of really good tournament runs at Arkansas. There's no doubt about it. But it's been a while since Arkansas has won a league. It's been a while since Arkansas has won the SEC tournament. I don't even think they have won the SEC tournament.
I do wonder if is that right? Maybe they haven't. Maybe they've had postseason success in the NCAA tournament. Even under Muss, right?
Again, like the thing there is just like. That was the thing with Muss, though, and they never got off the mat this year where it was just like, oh, well, they're getting off to a slow start, but they're going to be fine in the tournament.
Yeah, you kept waiting, and no.
And, like, I get that, like, that's – but to me, that wears a little thin a little bit when you start talking about, like – especially when you compare it to an Auburn or an Alabama or some of these – Tennessee, where it's like, okay, they might not be going into the tournament deep in the tournament as you are as regularly, but – they've got better regular seasons. They got hardware they can point to, they don't give you a trophy for making the Elite Eight.
Yeah, it's interesting to think like does a 25 win team that doesn't make it to the second weekend, right? Did they have a better season than a 19 or 20 win team that did make it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament? In the same thing. That's or like Musselman is somebody who's been to the second weekend 3 times in 5 years at Arkansas. Now taking that to USC, but like you said, there's not a ton of regular season hardware to point to. In that, this was the offseason. Dusty May is an interesting one because there was talk of him at Louisville and Michigan before he chooses Michigan. This would be the cycle where if we're going to start seeing the separation from the Big Ten and the SEC to everyone else, where those are the jobs that feel more secure, those are the jobs that feel like you're not going to be as subject to conference realignment as a Big 12 school or an ACC school could be. Like we could see maybe that gives jobs in the Big Ten and the SEC a boost if they're looking for coaches versus jobs in other places. And you know, Michigan getting Dusty May when he seemed to be Louisville's top choice would seem to be one example of that. I think that Arkansas it'll be and I guess by according to reports maybe they're shopping around the conference right now. Like that's the talk of
in multiple markets.
There was a week ago. There was talk that A&M could be the clubhouse leader for Devo Davis. Buzz Williams had been in contact, and
he fits the A&M mold.
How funny would it be if Devo Davis doesn't have to leave Fayetteville to play for Buzz Williams though? Because
when Auburn reached out to him, and there wasn't anything much after that. That one was I was just like, I mean, all right, okay. I mean, it's experience for sure, but it never – that one, of all the guys they've reached out to in the portal that you've seen, I'm just like, a lot of them like, okay, that makes sense. You can see where this fits. Devo was like, okay, maybe. Like,
you're not bringing him to fit into a system.
Well, like, it was also pre-KD. It was also like if you look at it now and be like, okay, we want to get a KD like type of replacement. It's like, okay, maybe, but like, no, I never saw it there with him. But that's just me.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Still time for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, final 20 minutes or so here on this Thursday. While we've got a little bit of time, Justin, talk a little bit about what all, you know, is up there, what fans can find, what is coming up here at this busy, busy time of the year on The Observer.
Yeah, I got a ton of stuff. Like we were mentioning earlier, wrote a story today about the top 10 players in my eyes that raised their stock the most during spring practices. A lot of takeaways from spring ball from earlier in the week you can check out. Did a story on Keldrick Falk this week, so you can check all that out. Tomorrow, mailbag, talking football and basketball on that one. Podcast will go up tomorrow morning as well. Dan and I and Painter will be we got a lot of stuff to talk about because a lot has gone on since the last – we recorded Monday night, and there's still been a ton of stuff we can talk about between Monday and Thursday night. So have that. A-Day weekend coming up. Obviously, we'll have coverage of that, both on the written side and on the podcast. And it's a great time to sign up. We're still running the special. You know, $5 a month. We're going to run that between now and the end of the weekend. So you can check that out. AuburnObserver.com. Sign up there. We email everything out to you. And we'll be hitting the off season here next week. It's the true off season, but we guarantee you, if you sign up to the Observer, you're going to get at least three newsletters a week, at least two podcasts a week, and we'll keep you entertained and informed on everything going on with Auburn football and men's basketball.
Well, I mean, and as we've been talking, I mean, the transfer portal, it's not going to slow down.
No.
There's going to be more and more news, as we've talked about. You know, Auburn's waiting to see what happens with the players that could come back on their roster and then looking to add players. J.P. Pegues, you mentioned him a little while ago. He was in for a couple of days, I guess Tuesday, Wednesday. This week, and that is he's definitely a top target for Auburn after two outstanding years this past year in all Southern Conference, 18-19 points a game, nearly five assists and rebounds per game for J.P. Pegues.
No, I think J.P. Pegues is a great fit. I mean, I've seen him ranked anywhere.
Certified Virginia killer.
That's right.
One of the things that would endear him to folks, the way he took him out of the tournament.
I've seen him ranked anywhere between, I think I've seen him as the second best point guard in the portal. I've seen everybody have him at least a top five guy in there. He's a great, great scorer. You know, you look at his numbers from a season ago, or this season, I should say. He had 15 different 20-point games last year. He had two 30-point games late in the year for them. 36% from deep. 87.5% from the line. You're talking about a three-level scorer. You're talking about a guy, also a good defender. He averaged over a steal a game. His defensive metrics are pretty good on a team that was small and you know, not known for their defense. I think he's a great fit for what Auburn wants, and it's no surprise they've been going after him as hard as they did. Was in for a visit this week. From everything I've heard, it was a really good visit. He is going to take a visit to Florida next week.
Yep.
And it sounds like it's going to be South Carolina,
that's
Auburn.
That's their spring game weekend, too, isn't it?
Yeah. South Carolina, Auburn, and Florida are going to come down the wire for him.
Yeah, he's out of Nashville originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He'll be a great pickup for whoever ends up getting him. Auburn's got a lot of guys they've reached out to in the portal. There'll be more guys coming in. So, like, if they don't get Pegues, it doesn't mean it's over. But – there's a reason why he was one of the bigger guys they went after. Also, you got to keep in mind something that people may forget. Auburn went after a couple guys from Furman in this window, and I don't know if the other one, Marcus Foster ended up going to Xavier, and they were on these guys quick. Like as soon as they entered the portal, they hit them with the contact pretty early. Why is that? Got to remember Auburn played Furman in a secret scrimmage. So they got Auburn's coaching staff got an up-close look at what J.P. Pegues brings to the table. So, you know, not surprising at Auburn. Auburn made quick moves to try to get him because, you know, Auburn played really well in that scrimmage. Did a great job, but that Furman team was really good. And, you know, like I said, in-person evaluation, they can already check the box off there.
Yeah, you can hardly top that. And something we talked about last week when Bruce said that Tahad Pettiford is not a point. I think that was another line that I'm sure they reinforced to J.P. Pegues.
Exactly. And, you know, when I asked that question last week to Bruce, he was like, now you understand kind of why our roster set up like that. And at that point, Trey Donaldson and Aiden Holloway were both on the team. You know, obviously it changes some things up. But, yeah, I mean, we saw Auburn early on from the very beginning of the portal. A lot of wings and a lot of off-ball guards and a lot of points. Auburn, you know, went after them. So, yeah, I mean, I think, again, I said that earlier with Aiden Holloway, and I feel the same way about Tahad Pettiford as well. If you're telling me if you're bringing in these five stars and these elite talents, these elite scoring talents, and you bring them into a scenario where, like, hey, look, college basketball, everybody's going after the oldest guys, and it's getting more and more experience. The portal's become a bigger deal. If I can bring in five-star talents and bring them in and say, hey, guys, you don't have to carry us. You don't have to – this isn't Kentucky. We're not building the whole thing around you. So let's go in there and just say, hey, we'll give you X number of minutes a game most of the time. Just go to work. Do what you do best and know that you've got some older guys and some experienced guys that can be there to back you up. Or, you know, you back them up and just work off of each other. I like that system and I like that format. You know, say Auburn brings in another point guard, right? Say they get a J.P. Pegues. If you tell Aiden Holloway, hey, you can work with J.P. Pegues. You know, that's gonna be your 1-2 at the point guard spot. You look at Tahad Pettiford and say, man, you're a bucket getter. We got a bucket getter in Denver Jones coming back as well. It ain't all got to be you. I like that setup a lot more than, you know, because a lot of times you're either ignoring your freshmen and not playing them, or you're a team like Kentucky or something like that where it's like all we've got. Yep.
Well, so. The minutes that Javon McCormick got when he was Javon wasn't a top a five-star recruit coming into high school or anything like that, but Javon was somebody that Bruce thought, all right, this is a guy who give him a year spelling Jared Harper at the point guard spot, and then a year later in Javon's it was his senior year, I guess, at that point when he took over, and because he was a junior when he was Jared's understudy in the 2019 season. The next year he was the point guard. Like, I think people have asked me, Justin, I wonder if you've run into this too, where it's like, well, Auburn recruited one of the top point guards out of high school last year, and he's on the roster. Auburn has a guy coming in who is listed as the top point guard coming out of high school. Why would Auburn be interested in a veteran point guard? Why would Auburn be looking out at players like J.P. Pegues when they have Aiden Holloway coming back? Trey just went in the portal, but you have Aiden Holloway coming back. You have Tahad Pettiford coming in. That is a tough job for a kid coming right out of high school. Yep. It's akin to, I mean, how many great college football teams were led by true freshman quarterbacks this past season? How many great college football teams were even led by second year? I mean, quarterback. It's a tough spot. And you look, and I mean, it's not as though the true freshman point guards this year lit up college basketball. And Collier was the top freshman point guard.
He fell off the face of the earth this year. Now he got hurt a little bit.
And there were questions about the team around him as well. But it's not as though just because you land the top point guard that it's a given that he's going to be great and you're going to be great. It can be an adjustment. I could see why with players coming back like Chad Baker Mazzara, and you assume Denver Jones and Chaney Johnson are part of that nucleus as well. You bring those guys back. It's a lot to ask a point guard who's new to college basketball to be your guy. It would make sense to go find a veteran option like a J.P. Pegues.
Yeah. So I mean, how would you if Auburn were to land J.P. or another veteran guard? So do you see it then? I mean, if Aiden's back, so is it those be your four guards? It'd be Aiden and Denver Tahad and J.P. I could see all four of them. I mean, I could see everybody getting a little work at that point, at at handling, being the primary ball handler at times.
Yeah, no, I think that would be a great setup. You telling me that you have two experienced, strong guys who can score, guys who've played a lot of basketball, and then you have two five stars that are playing with them. That's a best of both worlds kind of example in your backcourt, and I think that would be a great system for Auburn to kind of run, and then we'll see.
I guess Ja'Kai.
Ja'Kai's a three. It looks like to me.
I would say he's could there. He's there behind CBM.
Yeah, he's there behind CBM. I mean, you can still bring back Chris Moore, and I think if Chris Moore wanted to come back and be a role guy for you again, glue guy, you'll take it for sure.
Is 40 minutes from Chaney and Chris too much? I mean, that's you're probably looking at someone.
No,
else
you're you need to get another.
Yeah,
four.
I think so.
You're probably looking at someone.
And they have been recruiting.
That's assuming in a Broom departure as well for sort of what we're. I guess Broom could be the five as well if you.
I think Ja'Nai could be the four too.
That's what I was.
I think he could, but you would need another five.
Right.
I think. So here's the thing. I think if you are in a scenario when Ja'Nai Broom is back at Auburn next season, I think you keep playing him at the five. You can play him some at the four, and you can have him and Dylan play together, have another big. I see it. It's a situational thing.
He can coach the team if he wants.
But dadgum, guys, like I look at how Ja'Nai Broom was an All-American center this year, and you let that rock. And part of the reason why I think Ja'Nai Broom works so well is that you have four guys – who were spacing the floor around him and let him go.
He's not hearing that he needs to switch to the four to have an.
He's
NBA
gonna have to.
Either,
he's
right?
he's probably gonna play the four at the NBA level.
Okay,
he's probably more of a power forward than a center at the NBA. But in college, he's definitely he can definitely thrive in that. Now, if you want to run some scenarios next season where Ja'Nai plays the four and Dylan's at the five, or you have rotation matchup situation. I don't think you want to build that, because I do think you also want Chaney Johnson to play a good bit. And I tell you, I'll be interested to see. He probably needs to get bigger, like more muscular, but like Ja'Kai Howard has the athleticism to play
the
four.
He does.
I mean, you talk about above the rim type of
20
player.
Pounds, but
sure. But yeah, I mean, I think again, you start to look at it next season, right? You know, and you get a veteran point, and then you have Aiden with him, and you get, you get Tahad Pettiford in with Denver Jones, and you've got Chad Baker-Mazzara with Ja'Kai Howard, and then you look at maybe Chaney and then a guy with experience, at the four if you want to go that way, and you could run it back with your centers or figure it out. Front court's a little bit more murky right now, but, like, this Auburn team, I don't know if this is going to be 10-man, 11-man rotation again, like you as intense as it was this year, but you have the pieces to do that, and I like the best of both worlds kind of approach that Bruce Pearl and his staff has taken. You got to work the portal. You got to have experience. That's got to be the thing. But if five-star players want to come and highly rated players like Ja'Kai Howard want to play, you don't turn that down. And you're going to run into a scenario. I just saw it a day. I think Freddie DeLone from Tennessee went into the portal. There are a lot of teams in college, some really good teams in college basketball, that are bringing in five stars or bringing in really highly rated players and they're not playing them.
Yeah.
And redshirt. Those guys are leaving.
Yeah, those guys are – they're not going to stick around.
And I get it. There's pressure to win now. There's pressure to be experienced, especially with everybody else around you being as experienced as they are. But, man, like, you'll always have a room for a guy like a Jabari Smith, and you'll always have a room for a guy like Tahad Pettiford and Aiden Holloway as well. But more and more teams are just gonna ignore that and just say, hey, we're gonna use all of our recruiting efforts to just go get the best guy in the portal. And it's like, all right, like I don't want it to be in a spot where guys who are like, where are the elite basketball talents gonna go? Because I think now we're seeing they're not all gonna just go to Kentucky. Because like that, the stockpiling of super powered classes just isn't working. Like that is not. That's not a way to go about it, but you can do a mix. You definitely can do a mix. I think UConn's a great example of that. UConn's got team. I mean, you look at that UConn roster. UConn's got guys that were mid-major stars that they poached out of the portal, some even smaller school guys that they got, and then dudes that they brought in to develop, like a Stephon Castle, or guys that highly rated guys.
Yeah, I saw a stat.
It works, man.
The future belongs to the coaches that can identify at all levels, right? The transfer portal, the junior college ranks, high school. It's the guys that can identify the right players for their system and can land those players. Like that's who the and yeah, development matters too. but more than ever before, it's about
it's fit.
It's about figuring out it's which of the I mean
talent acquisition. It's yeah, you're identifying and acquiring that talent. I saw a stat, I believe 13 or 14 of the 20 starters in the Final Four are transfers.
Well, and you look at basketball. This is why basketball is different than football for a number of reasons. But you know, basketball fit matters a ton. Styles mm-hmm. matter a ton. Football, you know, you can have like this guy fits this system better. This guy fits this system better. You can do that. But a lot of times in football, you can just throw star power at a problem and it'll sort itself out over time. Basketball, I'll give you a great example of this. Basketball, USC, Arkansas. Hey, Eric Musselman's connected to both of them now. But like, USC and Arkansas were two great examples this past year where they just went and got guys. And yep. They brought them in and it didn't work out, right? Meanwhile, you have a team like NC State in the Final Four where it's like it took them a while to get going, but like they know what they do and they do it really, really well. I think Auburn – why was Auburn able to thrash a USC team that had one of the most talented rosters in the country coming in the year? Why are they able to go on the road to Arkansas and beat the tar out of them? It's just because they fit better. And in basketball, that matters a lot more than football. I'm not saying that fit doesn't matter in football. It definitely matters a lot more. In basketball, just the rosters are smaller. The way the game is played is a lot different. So, yeah, you're right, Dan. Like, it's fit. If you don't have fit, you can get into a real mess.
A lot of teams look great on paper.
Not mm-hmm. to just immediately pick on Kentucky again, but like look at Kentucky this year. They had mm-hmm. like how many years of college basketball? How many years did Kentucky make this work where it's just like they signed 4 or 5 stars, yeah. This team's going to be unstoppable, and then they get in and it's like, well, they can put the ball in the basket, but they all play like they play defense like an AAU team.
Well,
because
portal has had a lot to do with that too, yeah. Though. I mean, other people can adjust their rosters much more quickly than you could in the past.
Yeah. Now
you can, I mean, completely overturn mm-hmm. your roster intentionally or unintentionally.
And not to, because we're identifying examples where it didn't work out in college basketball this season. But I mean, think about the places that overachieved and came out of nowhere. Because I mean, South Carolina. Right, like that combination of talent was not supposed to get to the NCAA tournament this year. They were not supposed to be in the top half of the SEC, and yet Justin, because of fit and because they had the right pieces for the system, South Carolina able to vastly overachieve versus what they were supposed to be at the beginning of the season. And there are programs like that too, where I mean, this is and that's another difference. But I mean, you don't see that in college football. Very often, right? Where you identify you. It, generally speaking, in college football, if we're telling you in August that a team is no good, they're not going to be like it's rare. It's rare for a team in college football to be like, all right, they're picked at the bottom of their Power Five league. Here they are in the championship game at the end of the season.
You'll see some that are picked at the bottom make a bowl game,
maybe. But a South Carolina example from this year, right? Like you don't see that in major conference college football very often, and that's because. I mean, there are a lot of variables. We're talking about basketball, yeah. And
I think the transfer portal allows you to see a little more of it, though.
Sure.
I mean, maybe that's one of the good things about it. Oh, we need to get to that final break of the show. Back to wrap things up here on the Thursday Drive. Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell, do it.